Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
Okay, something weird is happening today. I'm not sure what it is. I mean, people are clapping to music on a video. Honestly, this is like the type of thing that if I was sitting next to my wife and she started doing that, I'd be grabbing her leg going, "Stop it, I'm so embarrassed right now." Well, I'm glad you're here. Welcome to Compass. It's Friend Day. So welcome, friends. It's really great to have you here. I'm just really, really appreciate you coming. So today we're starting off a brand new message series. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you've joined us. But let me ask you a question. How many of you guys love reality TV? Anybody? Anybody just a reality TV fan? So my wife and I, we've had a kind of a love-hate relationship with reality TV, which, to be honest, love-hate is really the only type of relationship you can have with reality TV. But we've had years of this kind of love-hate relationship with reality TV, and it started, as probably many of your relationship with reality TV did, it started with the first season of Survivor. Yes. Now, here's the thing. Survivor was a long time ago, and since I'm in my early 20s right now, I was probably like a teenager. And so when that first season came out, we were addicted to it. It was crack to us. And we watched it all the time. And it was appointment television. And I mean, there were no DVRs. I mean, we would VHS that sucker if we had to. We made sure that Survivor happened. But we loved it so much that when the season finale happened, at that point in our life, I was traveling a lot because I was in a band. I was on a tour on the date of the season finale of Survivor. And like, it was like a serious like problem for us in our married relationship, because it was like, wait a minute, this is something we do together. This is our show. We could record it via VHS, but if we do that, we don't see what happened. And so that was not good for us. So no joke, Terry and I watched the season finale of the first season of Survivor together via phone with me in the hotel, and Terry, we were on the phone the whole time. It wasn't like we're teenagers, like, "No, you go to sleep. No, you go. I can hear you breathing. Are you still awake?" You know? And so, but we watched it via phone, and if you have not seen, like, the speech that happened, and honestly, there was a speech that happened at the season finale of Survivor, the first season, that I think it made reality TV what it was. It kind of defined reality TV. And so if you haven't seen it, I want to share that with you, because this was a moment for me and my wife and our marriage. So guys, go ahead and play this video.
But Kelly, go back to a couple times Jeff said to you, "What goes around comes around." It's here. You will not get my vote. My vote will go to Richard. And I hope that is the one vote that makes you lose the money. If it's not, so be it. I'll shake your hand and I'll go on from here. But if I ever pass you along in life again and you were laying there dying of thirst, I would not give you a drink of water. I would let the vultures take you and do whatever they want with you, with no ill regrets. I plead to the jury tonight to think a little bit about the island that we have been on. This island is pretty much full of only two things: snakes and rats. And in the end of Mother Nature, we have Richard the snake, who knowingly went after prey, and Kelly, who turned into the rat that ran around like the rats do on this island, trying to run from the snake. I feel we owe it to the island's spirits that we have learned to come to know, to let it be in the end the way Mother Nature intended it to be, for the snake to eat the rat.
Okay, so no joke, I literally like pooped my pants when that happened. Okay, it was like, I could not believe what I had just seen. Because, like, who does that? Who says that? I mean, on TV, right? So, because here's the thing, TV for us is like, it's scripted shows, right? TV, it's dramas, it's comedies. And, like, the scripted shows, I mean, they're slick, they're glossy, you know, there's always a happy ending, you know, it's always that great stuff. But, like, then this happened, and it's like, okay, wait a minute. Like, this is different. This is not a slick, glossy, you know, drama. This is reality. And this is like, this is messy. And it's like embarrassing. And it's sometimes it's kind of hard to watch. You know, scripted shows, when you watch them, it's like, you know, the guy always gets the girl. You know, 24 hours is always just enough time to beat the terrorists. You know, every girl, there's always like two perfect guys with six-pack abs who are in love with her. And like her challenge is figuring which six-pack she wants to, you know, connect with, whether it's the, you know, the dark and dangerous six-pack who kind of broods, or whether it's the loving, kind, and just nice guy, neighbor next door six-pack who just wants to take care of her. You know, that's all those scripted shows. But then all of a sudden reality TV comes on and it just blows up all those conventions. And the thing is, life is like that, right? I mean, we tend to kind of think about our lives. I think we look at our lives kind of as a scripted drama. That's how we want our lives to be, right? I mean, we want our lives to have the happy ending. We want to get the girl. We want to catch the terrorist. This is totally, I'm going to tell myself, but maybe you guys are like me. Have you ever been in a situation like you're sitting on, I don't know, on a bus or just in a public place and there's a bunch of people around and you just imagine, what if that dude over there is a terrorist? If he popped a gun, what would I do? And I play out in my mind how I rescue, like that, the whole like doctor's office of people who are sitting there waiting to take their kids in. And then the pantograph, it's like, you know, local pastor saves sick children from Al-Qaeda terrorist. But that's like, it's how I look at my life. And I think it's how a lot of us look at our lives. We see ourselves as the main character in this awesome TV show. But the truth is that reality breaks in. Reality, it always breaks in, right? Because the guy doesn't always get the girl. You know, sometimes the terrorists actually win and 24 hours, you know, isn't enough. You know, sometimes life can have confusion and disappointment. Sometimes the guy with the dark and brooding guy with the perfect six-pack abs, who's so like dreamy, sometimes he lives in his mom's basement and he doesn't have a job. Sometimes the other dude with six-pack abs, the nice guy, sometimes he's already got a girlfriend and dang it, if you don't like her, if she's not kind of super awesome herself. Sometimes reality kicks in and the way we expect or want the story of our lives to play out, it doesn't. Reality is always going to break in. And what we expect to happen in the end, you know, sometimes that fairy tale ending that we expect, it can too often end in disappointment or rejection or hurt or confusion. And that's what I want to talk about today a little bit as we kick off this reality series is what happens when our lives become less scripted? What happens when our lives become less slick, less happy ending, and become more reality? What happens when our lives become someone pointing in our face and saying, if the vultures were coming to get you, I would let them do whatever they wanted to you, okay? What happens when reality breaks in? So what I want to do today is I want to talk about just a couple of reality rules, okay? These are just a couple of reality rules for how we can survive and thrive when things stop being scripted and start getting real. Okay, so this morning, yeah, some of the old people who like Real World were into that. So what we're going to, anyone? Any old people? I'm not one. I had to look that up. I don't even know the shows. So this morning, we're going to look at a group of guys who they thought they were living out this amazing story. And they were at the beginning of this awesome movie of their lives. But instead, reality butted itself in and they found out that the script for their lives was different than what they expected. So we're going to talk about 12 guys. And these were the disciples. These were the 12 followers of Jesus. Now, when Jesus had his ministry on earth, he went around teaching about the kingdom of God coming. And he hand-selected 12 people to follow him. 12 guys who basically just everywhere he went, they went with him. And he invested in them. And he taught them. And he trained them essentially to be like him and to do the things that he did. And so these 12 disciples, they were just totally invested in the life of Jesus. They traveled with him. They saw everything he did. They heard everything he taught. They lived just like him. What's interesting about the disciples, though, is the disciples, as they were following Jesus, they thought that Jesus was the Messiah, or at the very least, they hoped that Jesus was the Messiah. Now, if you haven't heard that word, the Messiah was basically this. Back in ancient Israel, when the Jews were kind of living in that area in the first century, Rome occupied Israel. Rome swept in, and Rome was a dominant power in the world at that time, and Rome took over Israel, and they ruled over all of the Jewish people at the time. The Jewish people didn't have their own king. They didn't have their own, well, they had kings and rulers, but they were all subject to Rome. What Rome would do is Rome would come in and they would appoint the Jewish king, and they would appoint the Jewish governors and the Jewish leaders. Really, the only pockets where the Jewish people had any sort of self-governance was in the temple or the kind of the religious world, which that had its own massive set of issues. But the Jewish people believed this, that the Messiah was going to come and he was going to just kick the butt of the Roman occupiers. And the Messiah was going to just come in force. And he was going to be this warrior king. And he was just going to step in and step up to the Roman authorities. He was going to throw them out of Israel, send them packing, and then he would take his place on the Jewish throne. And Israel could be a self-sustaining nation all unto itself. And Israel would again grow to be a huge power in the world. That's what the Jewish people expected of their Messiah. Now, these 12 guys who started following Jesus when he called them and started teaching them, this is their expectation. At the very least, this was their hope that maybe this is the guy who's going to do that. Now, early on in Jesus' ministry, they began seeing things. They began seeing these miracles happen, and Jesus was healing people, and Jesus was, his teachings were just so outside of the box and so different than what the other religious leaders were teaching. And they thought, had to think at the beginning, man, we're onto something. This is the guy. This is going to be it. And as they did that, they began to broadcast the story of their lives and where it was going as the 12 followers of the future Jewish king. The 12, it was probably like King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table is how they had to see themselves. We're the future king's closest advisors, his closest confidants, his closest friends. And when he takes that throne, when he kicks out Rome, there's going to be power. There's going to be prestige. There might be some ladies. There's going to be all of that great stuff that comes with being associated with the person who's in power. And so they're with Jesus and they're following this story that they think is going to be laid out for their lives. And it's a story of victory after victory after victory. And here's where we find them in Luke chapter 8. One day Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's cross to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and they started out. As they sailed across, Jesus settled down for a nap. So Jesus and his disciples, they traveled all over ancient Israel at the time, different regions, and they were just back and forth constantly. And so it was very common for Jesus and the disciples to hop into a boat to go over to another town, another village, and they would teach over there. And this is where we find Jesus. He calls his disciples together. He says, "Let's go over there." And Jesus does what pretty much anyone would do in that situation. He says, "We got a couple hours on this boat. I'm going to go take a nap and I'm going to crash back here." And so that's where we find the disciples and Jesus right now, traveling across this gigantic lake. Story continues. But soon a fierce storm came down on the lake. So traveling across, and the storm just out of nowhere hits and it sweeps down on them. It describes it this way. It says that the boat was filling with water and they were in real danger. I like how Luke, who wrote this, he wanted to make sure we knew this. He's like, this was a real deal storm, okay? When it swept down on them, it wasn't just a little bit of rain. It wasn't just kind of a wet nuisance. You know, this was real danger, okay? This was the real stuff. And here's the thing, at least four of Jesus's 12 disciples, at least four of those guys were fishermen. So at least four of those guys had made their living on the sea. They were out there every day, every night, catching fish. These were guys who knew that if they were not careful on the sea, that if they didn't read the signs, what was happening in the sky and on the water, that there could be real danger. And so these were guys who knew that when danger was happening, that it was real. And when Luke tells us that they are in real danger, they are. I mean, these guys, they knew that they were in trouble. How much trouble? Check this out. This is what they do. The storm sweeps in. They know they're in real danger. And so the disciples went to Jesus and they woke him up shouting, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." So, I mean, the first thing that I think is kind of interesting about this, the storm sweeps in, the boat is filling up with water. The disciples are just freaking out a little bit because they know that they are in real danger. And in the back of the boat is Jesus wrapped up in a tarp, sleeping like a 15-year-old who just like stayed up till 1 o'clock texting his girlfriend all night. And he's wet. The boat is rocking back and forth. The disciple, I mean, I could imagine at first when it starts raining, they're like, "Okay, guys, we should probably keep it quiet because we don't want to wake up Jesus. So let's just talk over here. I mean, should we start bailing the boat out? What do we do?" And then the waves start rocking and they're like, maybe talking a little. You ever have a thing where it's like you want someone to wake up? And so you're like, you're trying to drop things and make loud noise. It's not broken, guys. It's okay. But you're making loud noises and you're like, Oh, excuse me, something in my throat. Are you awake? Oh, did I wake you? I'm so sorry. Like, that's the disciples. They're like, oh my gosh, this storm, what's going to happen? Man, I'm glad Jesus can still sleep through this, guys. What? What did this dude? And so the boat's rocking anymore. And it just finally reaches the point where they're like, okay, bro, we cannot do this. We got to wake Jesus up. So they wake Jesus up in the middle of this chaotic storm. And they're like, Jesus, dude, we are going to drown. And like the English Standard Version of the Bible, another translation, it says this. It says that the disciples, they don't say, we're going to drown. It says, we are perishing. They're like, Jesus, we're dying. We're dying, Jesus. What do we do? I got a video to kind of illustrate this, to kind of give you just a taste of probably what I think the disciples were doing. So guys, would you share that with us real quick?
I love you, Kanaya, and I love you always.
Disciples, they're like, Jesus, wake up. Jesus, we're dying. John's peeing on himself over there. Jesus, he's scared to death. Okay, Peter, if I die, tell my mom I love her. Okay, they're panicking. I mean, literally, like, Jesus, we are dying. Okay, but again, with all their knowledge of the sea and the ocean, these fishermen are, they are freaking out like this. This is legit for them. They know the ocean, they know the sea, and they think they are going to die. They think that's it. And then I imagine, like, what has to be going through their mind is this: how can it end like this? This is not the story that we entered into where we follow the Messiah and he becomes king. What story of someone becoming king ends with they drowned in a boat because they were too stupid and went out into a storm? That's not how this is supposed to end. What's happening? This is not how the story was supposed to be written. And they're like, this is it, guys. When this thing all goes down, I mean, this storm is so bad that we're dead. I mean, there's no swimming to shore. There's no rescue. There's no Coast Guard. Guys, this is it. No rescue. You die. The story continues. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to switch over from Luke to the book of Matthew, okay? Now, there's several gospel accounts, stories of Jesus. This story is in three of the gospels. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And I like the perspective of how Matthew puts it beyond here. So the same story, same spot. The disciples are like, Jesus, we are dying. And Jesus responded, and he says this: why are you afraid? Well, Jesus, okay, I mean, storm, boat full of water, John's peeing on himself. Thomas just told Peter to tell his mom if he dies that he loves her. Jesus, I mean, we are going to drown right now. This is a thing. This is happening. I mean, why are you afraid? Have you ever looked death in the face? Jesus, we're going to die. We're supposed to be the heroes in our own story, but we're going to die in a shipwreck. But Jesus continues, guys, why are you afraid? And like, of all the things that you'd expect Jesus to say, none of this is on there. He says, you have so little faith. And this is what Jesus does. He doesn't grab a bucket and say, guys, this is what we do. We got to start bailing it out. Maybe we got to put the oars out so we can balance it out. Everybody just stay calm. He doesn't do any of that stuff. He got up and he rebuked the wind and the waves. And suddenly there is a great calm. Okay, so Jesus doesn't get up. He doesn't say, guys, here's what we do. Keep your cool. We're going to survive this. If we're smart, get your life jackets on. He literally gets up and he yells at the storm to stop it. And the storm does. He gets up and he's like, hey, will you quit it? I'm trying to sleep over here. And it does. It's almost as if Jesus is like annoyed. It's like he's put out. I would think that like Jesus, this is like one of those moments in the movie, right? Where Jesus would get up and he would respond with like this epic speech and it'd be like, brothers, there's a moment in the life of a man where you face down the elements and they grab each other by the arm. We live or die together. And yeah, that's like what I want in my Jesus movie, right? That's not what Jesus is like. You woke me up for this? And then he gets up and he yells at the storm like he's yelling out of his bedroom window at a dog that's barking in the middle of the night. He's like, will you shut up? And it does. What's crazy about this is that like Jesus is almost more annoyed at his disciples' response than he is at the storm, which to him is just a nuisance. It's just something that's just kind of getting on his nerves. And here's what we got to ask ourselves. Why? I mean, why is Jesus so calm? Why did Jesus respond to the storm the way he did and to the disciples the way he did? Why is he so calm? Why is he not rattled? Why is he not freaked out? Why and how did Jesus sleep so long in the back of that boat? And I totally imagine that like 5 minutes after this story ends and like Luke puts a pin in it and he's like, wow, the miracle was that the storm stopped, that Jesus literally got back in the back of the boat and went back to sleep again. But why was Jesus so calm? Why was Jesus willing to sleep as long as he did? Why was Jesus more annoyed with the storm and his disciples than scared? And the answer is this, is that God's reality is different than our reality. The reality that we see, when reality kicks into our lives, and when we see its full effects happening in our lives, we got to know this, that our reality is very different than God's reality. God sees things in a different way than we see things. And the disciples, they're responding to the reality of their situation, okay? I mean, listen, if I'm in a boat that's sinking, I'm going to be finding a bottle, and I'm writing a note to like my wife and kids, and it probably says something like this. Family, know that you have moved my life. It's something epic. I don't know. It's something in a deep voice. That's what I'm going to do. Because I'm like the disciples. I'm going to respond to the fact that I'm going to die. But Jesus knew that God's reality is not our reality. God's reality is different than ours. And here's reality rule number one, okay? So this is how we survive and thrive when, you know, life stops being scripted and reality kicks in. Reality rule number one is this. When the storm comes, switch realities. When the storms happen in your life, and can I just make you a promise? Like, I can't promise you a lot of things. I'll make you this promise. I'll even put money on it if you want to bet me, because that'd be cool. Storms are going to come in your life, okay? Bad things are going to happen to you. The Bears will lose a game. Probably today. But listen, the Packers are going to lose a game too. So suck it up. Bad things are going to happen. The Patriots will probably have a perfect season, but you know, we got to deal with our own set of like junk with the Patriots. When the storms come in life, you got to be able to switch realities and you got to be able to say, okay, this is what I see. This is what's happening in my life. This is my reality right now. But I know that God's reality is different. What I see is not necessarily what God sees, okay? God's reality is different than mine. And things that are overwhelming for us are not that big a deal for him. A storm that's going to kill you is not that big a deal for God, because God can just say, will you shut up and stop it? That's how God works. Jesus was sleeping in a boat while the disciples are panicking. Why? Because he understood that God's reality is different. He wasn't responding in the same way the disciples were, but to God's reality. And in God's reality, storms aren't scary. In God's reality, unscripted moments don't have to terrify us. In unscripted moments, they're completely in his control. God can handle it when the Mitsubishi plant closes and you lose your job. God can handle that. In our reality, everything's falling apart, but God can deal with it. God can handle it. God can handle it when you get the diagnosis that you're dreading from your doctor, that thing was the last thing you wanted to hear. God can handle it. God can handle it when your bank account is empty and your credit cards are maxed out and you don't know what you're going to do. God can handle it. God's not afraid of that. God can handle it when you're rejected by someone who you thought was on your team, you thought had your back, and you're hurt and you're broken, God can handle it. He can handle it when everything's falling apart. And why? Because while you're responding to your reality and you're looking at the waves and you're looking at the storm and you're just going, I'm dying. This is it. We're going down, guys. God's looking and he's going, wait a minute. It doesn't end that way. That's not how this story ends, because God's reality is different than ours. And you got to know that. There's people in the room today and you're going through a real situation. Things are real in your life right now. You need to know this. It doesn't matter how real it is, and it doesn't matter how hopeless it seems. God's reality, man, he sees that totally different than you. And he can take that in his hand, and he can take your reality, which is busted and messed up and broken, and he can just flip it and make it something totally different. He can handle it. But we have to be able to understand that. And when the storms in life come, we got to be able to switch realities and say, I'm not going to live in my reality, but I'm going to live and believe in the reality that God has for me, in the reality, that the truth and the future that God says that he has for me. But I don't think that, I don't think our only issue is that in believing that God isn't fazed by our storms. I think that's a big part. So that's reality rule number one. I think that's part of it. But I think the second part of it is illustrated in the rest of the story in Matthew 8. So Jesus gets up, he rebukes the storm. He says, stop it. Storm stops. And then he says this. It says that this is what happens. The disciples were amazed, which duh. And they say, who is this man? They ask. Even the winds and the waves obey him. Get this. The disciples have been traveling with Jesus for a long time. They've been living with him. They've been following him. They are followers of Jesus in the textbook sense of the word. There's no one on earth at this time who is literally physically closer to Jesus than the disciples were. And the disciples had no idea who was in the boat with them. The disciples had completely forgotten who it was who was sleeping in the back of the boat. And in our lives, when storms come, we've got to remember who's in the boat with us. When I was doing youth ministry, when Terry and I were youth pastors, we did this thing every October called Five Nights of Fear. And it was just a big 5-week deal where we'd talk about scary topics out of the Bible and we'd have kids invite their friends. One of the things I loved this, is in order to get into the main room where our youth service was held, we would make a haunted house. And so every student, and every week it was different, every student had to walk through a scary, creepy haunted house. And I'll just tell you for the record, like youth pastors, if you just keep quiet, keep your mouth shut, you can get away with a lot of things in a church. Unless you're Kevin and the youth pastor at Compass, because you can't at Compass, because I know all the secrets. So we had this haunted house, and all the students had to walk through this haunted house in order to get there. And dude, we did things like we made a cardboard tunnel where kids had to like crawl on their hands and knees to get through. And it was pitch dark, and we had yarn hanging down, and they'd crawl through it, feel like spider webs. And there's one part where we're by a door, but nobody knew it because it's pitch black. And we cut a hole in the cardboard. We had this like rubber like werewolf hand. And so we had a dude, it was actually Augusta's dad, Bob Riggins. He's sitting in there, and when a student would walk by, he'd go, rah! And grab him with this werewolf hand. You didn't even know it was coming. She's just crawling through tunnels. Terrifying. It was awesome. It was the best. So we made one of these every week, and I was totally involved in making all the details of this haunted house, making sure that it was as scary as possible. I knew all the ins and outs of it. And when it was time to do it, I always wanted to walk Terry through first, because Terry hates being scared. And I think that people who like being scared, the biggest joy is seeing other people scared with you. And so I wanted to walk Terry through the haunted house first. And so I did. And I grab her and we're walking through, and like we get to the part where, you know, it's like there's like this figure standing in the corner and it's got a black sheet on it and you're waiting for it to jump out at you, but it's a fake because it's just a microphone stand. And then you get to the next one and it does jump out at you. And she's like, she's scared. She's freaking out. Her eyes are closed. She's grabbing my arm and like, you know, tearing my skin off with her fingernails. She's so scared and like, I don't want to crawl through the tunnel. I don't want to crawl through the tunnel. I'm like, you got to crawl through the tunnel. We're asking these kids to crawl through the tunnel. Come on, just crawl through the tunnel. Just laughing. And so she does it. But I'm watching her go through this and I'm like, why is she so scared? What in the world is my wife so scared of? I am right here. Like, I built this thing, okay? I know where all the light switches are. I know where all the emergency exits are. I know every you know, chump kid who's sitting under a sheet. I know who they are. I know all the scares. Why is she so freaking out? But she was in this moment where it's like her reality was just the pitch black, you know, cobwebs and spiders instead of like literally like pink yarn hanging down, touching her in the face. Because she didn't know. She didn't know my reality was totally different than hers. And she kind of forgot going through that thing that I was with her. The guy who built it, the guy who made the haunted house and knew all the ins and outs of it was right there walking her through it. And when we go through the storms of life, sometimes, and followers of Christ, Christians, I'm talking to you because this is us. Sometimes we can completely forget who's in the back of the boat with us. We can completely forget the fact that as we're terrified of the lightning and terrified of the thunder and terrified of every piece of mail that comes through because it's going to be a bill that we can't pay, or because it's going to be something talking about our health that we aren't expecting, or it's going to be a rejection letter from that college that we really wanted to go to. We forget the fact that the God who created the universe, the God who literally can sustain everything, is just sitting in the back of the boat with us. And his reality is different than ours. And rather than trying to panic and freak out, all we got to do is reach back and say, Jesus, I'm a little freaked out right now. Can you maybe just hit the light switch? Because he knows where it is. Man, when things are pitch black for us, he knows the ways out. He knows where the lights are. He knows every corner, every nook and cranny of our lives. And Jesus was in the boat with the disciples the entire time. And they were so scared of what they couldn't control. They were so scared of what they perceived as their reality. But man, Jesus was right there. He's right there in the boat with them. And he's right there in the boat with you. And Jesus' reality was so much different than theirs. Jesus knows how to get you out of every situation you're in. Jesus knows how to hold your hand in just the right way to walk you through. Jesus knows how to connect you with God in a way that can make it so that you never have to be scared of those storms in your life ever again. Because here's the thing, reality is going to happen in your life. It's a promise. It's a guarantee. It's inevitable. But when those things happen, we have to be able to understand that God's reality is not ours. We need to be able to switch our reality to God's reality. And then we have to always remember who's in the boat with us. And it's Jesus. And he can stand up and he can look your problems in the face. And he can just go, stop it. Just stop it. And all your storms, all your problems will just go, boop, okay. Because that's who's with you. And that's the reality of God's power at work in your life. Now, you may be in this room today, and this may be kind of new to you, this conversation, talking about a relationship with God, even talking about Jesus. And maybe if you've listened to this, you've heard it in different terms and ways that you've heard it before. And it's less religious. It's less about rules and things that I'm supposed to do to be good. And it's more about a God who loves me and just wants me to know him and wants to walk through life with me and guide me and lead me. It's not about all things I'm supposed to do or should do or shouldn't do that I should feel guilty for. It's about a God who wants to do something amazing in my life. But if you're honest in looking at your life, you would say that, Chris, I'm in the boat and I'm in it alone. Jesus isn't in my boat because I've never asked him to. I've never invited God into my boat. And I can tell you today, and this is God's honest reality, is that this, all you have to do to have Jesus right in there with you is just to ask. It's just to say, you know what? Jesus, I can't sail through the sea all by myself anymore. I can't weather these storms. I'm going to die. I'm going to drown. It's hopeless. And I've tried and I've tried and I've tried and I've tried, and I just can't make these storms stop, and I can't navigate through them in the way that I need to. I just can't. But Jesus, will you just come into the boat of my life? I'll give you the steering wheel. If boats have steering wheels, I don't know how you steer a boat. I'll give you the oars, Jesus. I'll give it all to you. Just steer it. Just take it. I trust you. I need you. I can't do it on my own. I've tried and I've failed, and I've made just a mess of my life. I've made a mess of my relationships. I've pushed through as far as I can go, and there's just nowhere else for me to go on my own. And I need Jesus. And if that's you today, I want to give you the opportunity to just ask him. To just ask Jesus to come into the boat of your life and just sail with you, to take the wheel, to take the oars, to just take control, to change the reality that you see into the reality that God sees. When you do that, everything changes for you. And all of a sudden, instead of living a life that's hopeless, instead of living a life where you go through struggles that just happen and they have no meaning or purpose, all of a sudden you're living the best life that you could ever possibly live. Like, I want to bow your heads and close your eyes. If you're in the room today and you're one of those people, you know you want Jesus in your boat, but he's not there. And you're just like, Chris, I'll just be honest. I need this. I want Jesus in my life. I want to surrender it to him. And I just want him to come in and just take this mess and make something beautiful out of it. If that's you, no one's looking. Everybody's heads are bowed. Everybody's eyes are closed. But I just want to connect with you. If that's you, you want Jesus, just slip your hand up right now so I can see it. And I'll pray for you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Heavenly Father, I pray with my friends who've just lifted their hands. God, I pray, Lord, and I confess that, Lord, I'm a sinner. I confess that I've made a mess of things on my own. I confess that I've tried to do things my way and that my way doesn't work. And I need something better. I need something real. And Jesus, I just want to live for what I was created to live for. And so, Jesus, with those who lifted their hands, I invite you into my life. I ask you to forgive me of my sin. Jesus, I believe that you died for me because you love me. I believe that you want to do something amazing in my life, and so I surrender it to you now. And I ask you to take all that I have and all that I am. Take this boat and steer it and secure it and guide it, God, and do something amazing in me. I give my life to you. Father, I pray with those Christians in the room, those followers of Christ who have been weathering storms on their own. God, there are people here today who love you and want to give their best to you, but who are in the middle of something and they've forgotten who's in the boat with them. And so, Lord, I pray, Lord, that you would open their hearts and open their eyes to see Jesus, your plan and your purpose for their lives. God, I pray that you would open their eyes to your reality that you have for them. They could look beyond their circumstances and they could see a God who can do greater things than they could ever hope, dream, or imagine. And I pray, Jesus, that you would set us free from the power of storms in our lives and that you would set us free into relationship with the God who can control everything. And that, God, when we go through those valleys, when we go through those trials, and when we go through those storms, that rather than being afraid for our lives, rather than questioning and doubting and worrying, that we would trust that the God who made the world, that the God who made us, that the God who has a purpose for our lives is sitting right next to us through all of it. Lord, we love you. We thank you. We pray this all in your name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.